It's 9:59 and you are tuned to WERU-FM, 89.9 Blue Hill, 102.9 Bangor, and streaming online at WERU.org. Indigenous Voices with Meredith DeFrancesco and Rhonda Fry is up next.
Welcome to Indigenous Voices, a monthly talk show discussing topics affecting the Native people of Maine. Today, Tuesday, October 16, 2007, we will have a pre-recorded segment with a Passamaquoddy tribal member from Pleasant Point regarding a lawsuit against the Bureau of Indian Affairs on the LNG project. The last segment of the show, we'll have a live interview with a Passamaquoddy tribal representative to the state legislature regarding the tribal Racino issue, set to go before the voters of Maine next month. I'm Rhonda Fry.
And I'm Meredith DeFrancesco. On September 14th, the United States Court of Appeals for the First Circuit ruled that the Passamaquoddy group, Nulanke Yutmanin Nikatmikan, which translates to "We Protect the Homeland," could continue their court case against the Bureau of Indian Affairs regarding the proposed liquefied natural gas terminal at Pleasant Point on Passamaquoddy Bay. In May 2005, the Tribal Council, without all its members present, voted 4-3 to affirm a 50-year ground lease with the Oklahoma-based development company, Quaddy Bay LLC. The project's plan is to develop an area known as Split Rock, which is a historical sacred site for the tribe. Immediately following the tribe and company's formalization of the lease, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, BIA, approved the lease. What the BIA is required to do, however, before they approve of projects, is at the crux of the lawsuit at hand. These include responsibilities to review potential environmental and cultural impacts on the tribe and their lands. Though at first the BIA claimed tribal members had no standing to pursue a grievance concerning the lack of adherence to procedure, and though the U.S. District Court in Maine initially agreed with the BIA, the September 14th reversal at the U.S. Court of Appeals allows the Passamaquoddy plaintiffs to pursue their case, which could revoke the legitimacy of the current lease the company Quaddy Bay LLC has garnered with the tribe. We interviewed one of the plaintiffs, Vera Francis, this weekend via phone.
This is Vera Francis, and I am a coordinator and member of the group Nulanke Yutmanin Nikatmikan. We take care of our land group.
There's a lot of background to this case and a lot of issues that we can discuss later on or as they come up. But as today's story is about the lawsuit against the BIA, we'll start with the elements of the case which concern the BIA's sidestepping of procedures that would require them to review environmental and cultural impacts on the tribe before they gave their blanket and immediate approval of the Quaddy Bay LNG lease agreement with the tribe, as they did on June 1st, 2005. The Passamaquoddy plaintiffs in this case charged that the BIA failed to appraise the land to be leased, failed to prepare an environmental assessment of potential impacts, failed to provide an opportunity for public comment, and failed to consider the historical, religious, and cultural significance of the leased land. On all points, the BIA claimed the plaintiffs lacked standing to bring the charges, and in addition, that the charges were in the legal term not ripe, meaning they were being prematurely brought. Maine's U.S. District Court agreed with the BIA, but their decision was picked apart by the United States Court of Appeals for the First Circuit in Boston and reversed on September 14th. Vera Francis, let's start with who is bringing this lawsuit against the BIA and then take point by point these charges you've brought and the arguments on why it is your legal right to bring them. The laws that we're specifically referring to in this case that the BIA did not meet the procedural requirements for are the National Environmental Policy Act, NEPA, the National Historical Preservation Act, and the Endangered Species Act, and also the Leasing Act. So welcome to the program, Vera, and start with who is bringing this lawsuit.
Thank you, Meredith. And as you have said, all of that rationalized a mad dash to not just the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, but also to more local agencies through the Bureau of Environmental Protection. So as you know, there's a number of things that have taken place since the ground lease approval in our claim to challenge the legality of that mm-hmm. ground lease with the Bureau of Indian Affairs. A number of us, beyond just our membership, but are and have been organized and pursued this in the federal court. Nolanke Udman and Nikat Migun have members that filed this claim in the trial court. David Moses Bridges, myself, Hilda Lewis, Deanna Francis, Reginald Joseph Stanley, Mary Bassett are formerly the plaintiffs in the case, as well as our broader membership.
Mm-hmm. And so talk through some of these particular points as they apply to the National Environmental Policy Act, the National Historical Preservation Act, the Endangered Species Act, what you are talking about that the BIA should have done before they approved this lease agreement with the tribe, and if you want, you can back up and say what was required, as you understand it, under law for the BIA to do, and then how they did not then adhere to that those requirements.
Well, let's just preface that a little bit previous to the actual claims in the federal court, because obviously there's a company pursuing an LNG terminal to be built at Split Rock. First of all, Split Rock is a cultural and ceremonial gathering place. But this company depended upon several, I believe, erroneous beliefs. One being, namely, that a simple majority rule was more than an effective means to characterize democracy in general. I mean, they really believed that nobody would care enough to question their exploitive intent. This is how this all started. And after that, you know, the mad dash to FERC and now the BEP, all, you know, is pretty much on record. Mm-hmm. But first of all, as a group, I mean, we don't believe that simple majority rule is an end-all. Obviously, if we did, we wouldn't, you know, we would be silent and passive citizens. But a simple majority rule is what brought this into effect, a 4-3 vote by a tribal council to approve a ground lease, which, as you have said, was supposed to be reviewed and scrutinized by BIA, and that was not at all what happened. Instead, it was a blanket approval. It was literally a free pass to change our lives forever, and we do oppose that. We have opposed that. We've opposed that and challenged that in the trial court and the federal court in Maine. And indeed, BIA was supposed to follow major federal rules, the ones that you've listed, NEPA, the National Historic Preservation Act, the Endangered Species Act, and the Indian Long-Term Leasing Act, because this is no simple, you know, temporary lease. It's a 50-year-plus lease. And the BIA didn't follow any of these laws. But at the trial court, the BIA claimed that the ground lease was conditional, meaning that it was not finally approved. And then claiming that we had absolutely no business to even complain.
So they were claiming that their approval was something that could possibly be revisited. But later, then they admitted that what they had done was a final approval, and they wouldn't be revisited as the project could potentially unfold.
Exactly. During the trial court, that was their position, was that this ground lease was conditional. And it was not finally approved, which in essence preempted in our claims, which the trial court relied on in its decision to dismiss that claim. We appealed that decision. We appealed at the First Circuit Court of Appeals in Boston. And as a result of that, we are now heading back to the trial court. Why? Because the BIA at the appellate court changed its story. It now says that the ground lease is final. And so the appellate court agreed with us that our claims were and are indeed ripe and our interests indeed more clear, and we do have standing, and that we can challenge the ground lease that Quaddy Bay claims it has.
Is the law that ambiguous that that there isn't some sort of precedence about when the BIA makes their decision on something this significant and could potentially have an incredible significant impact on cultural and environmental issues for the tribe. Is there not that much for the courts to look at then to just believe the BIA, whether they say it's final or not final, and then whether these other procedures should be kicked in?
Well, at the trial court has to take a federal agency on its word.
Mm-hmm.
It's understandable that the trial court would take whatever the agency said as that's what it is. At that time, they claimed that this ground lease was not final, was conditional, and there was no problem. There was no harm, that we were premature.
And
but the law does state that in the situation that involves a ground lease of tribal land, the BIA must act, not just in its fiduciary to the tribe, but also to the best interests of the people, the Passamaquoddy people. And that it didn't do. How could it have done it in such a short amount of time? There was no NEPA, and there was no reliance on any of these other agencies that would have had to have been consulted and had an opportunity to review the particular ground lease, its impacts, its long-term effects, its strengths, its weaknesses, or whatever it was that you know that they're that they are delegated. To examine, to scrutinize, to thoroughly review this ground lease.
And now
they had no opportunity to do that, in other words.
Mm-hmm. And so then, for instance, under the National Environmental Policy Act, NEPA, the BIA then apparently is responsible for conducting an environmental impact statement or an environmental assessment to have some idea of what the environmental impacts would be. Is that right?
Correct. Exactly. And it would have been, it would have kicked in the NEPA immediately, which would have given the tribe, the community, and those most impacted by this an opportunity to participate in a process that was much more thorough, much more appropriate, considering the magnitude of the of a liquefied natural gas terminal proposal and the cumulative kind of environmental impact that could potentially pose to the community,
and in particular to the Endangered Species Act. You are saying that, and the last court is affirming that the BIA should have consulted with, but failed to consult with, the National Marine Fisheries Service as to the impacts of the lease on certain endangered whale populations in Passamaquoddy Bay.
Correct. They failed to even come anywhere near close to consulting or notifying any other agency that they should have done.
And how does this compare to other cases, as you understand, or as has been brought up by this recent decision, and how the BIA, what their responsibility or what they actually did in other cases with tribes who were looking at land leases of large projects like this? Did they then conduct environmental impact assessments in those cases? Past cases?
Well, generally, I think what's different about this case is that it does involve to some extent the Passamaquoddy tribe and its vote to approve a ground lease for a company to build a liquefied natural gas terminal. In other situations, often energy development comes in and does not consult with the tribe, and in fact, the tribes are usually the entities that will challenge the development, which is either going to impact them or is close enough to impact them considerably. So it would in those situations, even on adjacency, would kick in the NEPA process, which would lend itself to a thorough environmental impact assessment of that particular industry on that tribe.
And in this case, the company had been working with the tribal leadership for quite some time, not always in what many of the tribal members considered a very transparent or inclusive process.
Correct. I think that that's really what is at the heart of the problem is the initial process here was one that was very destructive and exploitive, and I think that though that will be proven to be what prevents this project from moving forward, it did create a lot of unnecessary, destructive impact on our small, sensitive, particular community, and one that's based on, fairly close-knit ties with families. That's really what, brings us back to this particular company and those presumptions that they came in with, the erroneous beliefs that I mentioned earlier, is in fact that we do profoundly care and that we do question, but more we appreciate an opportunity for process in our day in court, which is what this appellate decision guarantees us. Is our day in court.
Some of the concern that you were just referring to in this council vote, the 4-3 vote, that it happened, as I remember being at the press conference, it had happened where some of the announcements were made, it happened very quickly, and so this opposition within the tribe was not able to let their voice be heard, even to the BIA, and some of the leadership and the past leadership members of the tribal council and past members of leadership, as well as other members of the community who wanted to add their voices, could not have that heard, and in fact found out later that the BIA decision was made almost immediately. In fact, was made before the announcement was made.
Right, and they failed to inform the people once again, and that's the whole problem with lack of transparency, is you don't know what's going on. And then you're not able to access the process to be informed or to help inform that process. But that's an easy, our community is easily disrupted. It's a very sensitive community. It's not that easy when you underestimate or think too little of those that have the knowledge and drive to stifle your exploits. I think that many of us that have challenged this, obviously we were very extremely disappointed in the lack of transparency and the denial of our participation. But it is exactly that, participation, that's what makes change. But to deny us, the common decency is again what I believe will bring this project down. And it brought it down from the start, I believe. So,
with this case particularly?
In particular with this case, because it does have such... Its effect is bigger than our lives today. I mean, we're not talking about something that could impact our life in the next 5 or 10 years. We're talking about something that could change our lives forever. So,
to get back then to the issue of standing and what has been acknowledged then now with this court case decision, this reversal of the initial decision, is that the plaintiffs or the Passamaquoddy who are against this project do indeed have standing as tribal members who will be potentially adversely affected by this. So that in itself is part of the major significance of this case.
Yes, the ruling means that we do get our day in court. And all we want to do is have the opportunity to explain to the district court why BIA's approval of the lease violated the law and their obligation to the tribe, including the people. Obviously, we were disappointed that it had been dismissed, but we are certainly now exceptionally happy that we will have our chance to present our case.
And we referred to the National Environmental Policy Act and the Endangered Species Act, but one of the others that we didn't talk about yet was the National Historic Preservation Act. Can you explain a little bit about what BIA now then would be required to observe?
Well, we have to go back to the trial court first, mm-hmm. and re-examine their failing to adhere to those laws. But if they had done their due diligence in this case, Split Rock, for one, which is it's a major historical and cultural and spiritual location for Passamaquoddy people, it would have had to take that into account. It did not. And it still has not.
Can you talk a little bit more about how you feel the significance of Split Rock and the significance of the impact on Passamaquoddy culture? Well, what your perspective is on how a project like this could impact it?
Mm-hmm. Well, apparently the appellate court agrees, you know, that our participation is one based on our interest to Split Rock. You know, there's implications to that decision already at play, but maybe we can come back to those later. Split Rock is a significant cultural and ceremonial gathering place for Passamaquoddy people. To think that we could be denied and have already been impacted by the thought that they're going to desecrate this area certainly does speak to a deeper concern that, you know, we could lose not just the only public access we have to the Passamaquoddy Bay, but also to our very profoundly spiritual place, a sacred place, that could prevent us from not just accessing waters, but also to practice and to be Passamaquoddy, literally, in the ways that our ancestors have, and in the ways that our descendants also have a right to have.
Someone from the Passamaquoddy tribe brought up at a public meeting with the company Quaddy Bay LNG this spring that, and as you're implying too, that it goes far beyond just Split Rock, that the Passamaquoddy land at Sabaic, or also called Pleasant Point, it's a very small residential area where this facility is being proposed for, and so that in fact that the impact, cultural impacts, are not only specific to Split Rock, but just having such a large industrial facility in that prominent a place on Passamaquoddy Bay literally would transform the tribal land there.
Forever. I mean, it's within reach of Split Rock are the majority of the houses at Pleasant Point, the majority of the population that resides on tribal lands are within, you know, just a short distance from the proposed site. Our school is just a short distance from the proposed site. The health center is just a short distance, as is the church and many other facilities that one have a number of elderly that live close to the shore. I mean, there's very little room to build housing there. So there's not much space left. And the small space that is left is being proposed for one of the largest industrialized facilities ever to come to Maine. And it's a ridiculous plan. It's really not an appropriate location in many respects that make sense just based on common decency. It's disrespectful in many ways, but it certainly is not even one based on common sense.
Now, if going back to court, this could potentially reverse the whole process that has transpired until this time, meaning that the lease that the BIA approved could essentially be reversed. Is that right?
Correct. We're asking for that. That's what we've asked for from the beginning. And in fact, because the BIA failed to follow these laws, failed to adhere to its responsibility and duty to thoroughly examine and scrutinize any ground lease, especially one that would enjoin a heavily industrial and hazardous facility such as a LNG terminal. It's mind-boggling that they thought that would be okay, that would be acceptable, that nobody would question their failing to follow the law. To pre-approve a ground lease without following rules, basically, it would make sense that ground lease is, in fact, an illegal ground lease. So we are looking at it from that perspective that we are going to ask for a reversal of that decision.
Do you want to talk a bit more about the actual conduct of the company? We're talking a lot about BIA right now, but the conduct of the company itself, Quaddy Bay LNG, and how it became very involved in the tribal processes themselves and how they got to the position that they have taken on.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, as I said earlier, that while it may be easy to disrupt a sensitive community, such as ours, again, it's not that easy when those you most underestimate are probably those with the knowledge, drive, and fortitude to stifle, that exploitation or that particular effort to undermine, people, to deny them process, to deny them any voice in their lives, in their families' lives, in their descendants' lives. I think that it's that brought this project down from the start. It was that dispirited attitude and action that has followed this company and this project. And perhaps they did not anticipate that at all. But obviously, the appellate court recognized that we do indeed have a right to process, and that we do indeed have interests that, while are inclusive with the tribes, we also have a right to express those interests, even if the tribe itself has signed on, so to speak.
Do you want to talk at all about that pattern that perhaps can be seen of companies that do try to set up projects in various areas and that underestimation of communities and culture of areas?
Well, first of all, I don't think either the tribes or even Maine's leadership always gets it right. I mean, how could they always get it right? And in this case, obviously, we believe that the tribe did not get it right. But we were not comfortable in not taking action. And we're no more comfortable with the notion that perhaps, you know, that the Maine's leadership has adopted that it is what the tribe wants. So therefore, you know, those of us that are challenging this are just unhappy with that decision. That's something that we totally reject. Mm-hmm. And as I've said, the tribe leadership doesn't always get it right. But I think that what's been ignored is that when people are able to rise to the task in front of them, and this certainly has been no easy and simple task, and often has been very unpopular locally, that's an indicator of health. That's the indicator of a strong community. So I think what I'm trying to say is making positive and long-lasting change has never been easy. But it is obviously for all of us a necessity of our times, as we all know, in world events, in world global climate change, and abrupt change at that, that, you know, we do have to rise. We do have to stand up. We do have to take action. And I think for us, for Passamaquoddy people, I mean, it is for many of us, I believe that it's a creator-given right that informs us and guides our actions. And it's when we have distanced ourselves from that, it's when we have disconnected ourselves from that, when things like this can happen. And certainly on behalf of our ancestors, our descendants, we've committed ourselves to opposing any intrusion, opposing any infringement on our way of life, and we do not, absolutely do not accept any disruption with our spiritual connection to the land and the sea, Passamaquoddy Bay.
Do you want to talk a little bit, too, then, about, you're talking about the broader community opposition, those people in neighboring towns like Eastport and Perry, and in Canada across the Passamaquoddy Bay, and the Passamaquoddy tribe in Canada, what the work that's been happening, joining many different people together around this issue?
Well, I think that's a positive a result of something that's potentially very negative and far-reaching, is to be able to mobilize and to collectively express not just an opposition to something, but to the deeply held appreciation of the integrity and the significance of Passamaquoddy Bay and its surrounding communities. So I think that's been a gift to everybody that's been involved in this, whether or not it's appreciated today fully. It certainly will be what marks this at some point in the future as being a very positive result, is to be able to you know, even with divergent issues and differences of experience, to come together with that kind of desire to preserve and protect the ecological integrity of Passamaquoddy Bay is a very significant and I believe what will surely support and help defeat this proposal especially because Canada's very public and consistent stance on the impossibility that these ships can transit the waterways here.
That they will actually deny them passage.
Absolutely.
And the federal government of Canada has said this repeatedly.
And most recently, just last week. So it's, in case people are doubtful of their stance, I believe that they have had, on occasion, reiterated that they will deny access.
You are listening to Indigenous Voices. We are talking with Passamaquoddy tribal member Vera Francis about the United States Court of Appeals decision last month to affirm that tribal members have standing to sue the Bureau of Indian Affairs for failing to uphold procedural requirements under the National Environmental Policy Act, the National Historical Preservation Act, the Endangered Species Act, and the Indian Long-Term Leasing Act in regards to Oklahoma-based Quaddy Bay LNG's proposal to build a liquefied natural gas terminal at Split Rock at Pleasant Point. We asked Vera Francis to comment generally on the BIA's role and on concerns that this case fits into the profile of environmental racism. This term refers to a trend where environmentally hazardous facilities are located in communities of color and low in economic status and therefore consequently often of lesser political clout. Vera Francis.
Well, one of the things, obviously, that has to happen is that the BIA has to confront the fact that, as an agency, they must fulfill their obligations to fully consider the long-term impacts of a proposed LNG terminal on our community's health and well-being, as well as on our spiritual connection to the land and to the sea. But it's within that failure, it's within that oversight of pure oversight and sweep and approval of this ground lease that really speaks to the deeper problem of environmental racism, because that's the only way that environmental racism has a play in this, is when an agency required to do its utmost and held to such a standard that it should protect has in fact failed to even move anywhere close to its role. Companies like Quaddy Bay LLC can come in and literally impose some of the most dangerous, some of the most hazardous, some of the most long-lasting with negative impact on some of the most vulnerable, some of the most sensitive, and some of the most particular communities, like a Native American community, is what makes this particular case environmental racism. Only could it happen to those communities. Mm-hmm. This, as you know, has been rejected time and time again, all the way up.
Proposals.
Right.
So now where does the court case go from here?
Well, where the BIA actually has until probably the end of this month to decide whether or not it's appealing this decision of the appellate court. And we will probably be, if there is no appeal to it, then we go back to the trial court, and we probably won't be back to the trial court until December. And in essence, we start over.
And in the meantime, Quaddy Bay LNG, as you understand it, will continue to proceed or postpone their processes that they're in right now with FERC and the Maine State Environmental Agencies?
Right. I mean, obviously this all began with a mad dash to FERC and the BEP. But as you know, just as a few days ago that Quoddy Bay LLC has opted to, in effect, slow down the process that it has initiated, in that there's a number of contingencies with FERC as well as the BEP, and of course with the federal court, that perhaps for the first time the company is beginning to acknowledge the burden and the crushing weight of that burden on it as it pursues these regulatory processes and attempts to get permits that in many ways are probably not timely and are without merit and standing. So, and you know, we would argue in the same way that they've argued against us, that they don't have standing and that they don't have, it's not time for them to proceed. And it's really, though, their responsibility to forward these processes. We, of course, have objected to that.
Is it that common for tribes or tribal members to sue the BIA?
I'm not sure if there's tribal members have done that on their own behalf, but tribes have certainly have challenged the BIA on its failure to do its own duty to protect a tribe. So I'm not certain about whether or not tribal members have done that in the past. I think that is what is unique about this, but also because of that, it does have implications, and more so directly to, I think, the state of Maine for thinking that it could be comfortable in accepting, you know, the general policy and practices that, you know, that first simple majority vote was the end all to that discussion. I think that what it does, it puts the state as well as the Bureau of Indian Affairs on notice that it can't just simply do that and think that it, you know, that there won't be any accountability to it. So I think it's changed the landscape, so to speak, and with the state of Maine, because as we've often were told in the beginning of this that we were just unhappy with a decision and we should just live with it, I think the implications are greater on the state of Maine, because in this case it has been a group of tribal members that have pursued and challenged an action in, between a developer and the tribe and a federal. As often as we can, there's several links, and because this process has been a costly process for us, we are requesting folks to help, and if people wanted to, that they sure could donate either time or resources, more especially. And there's a place on the website where you can learn all about that. So we always welcome support, and we are definitely in need of financial support towards the legal defense of Passamaquoddy Bay. And also savepassamaquoddybay.org is the Three Nation Alliance website, which always has updates as well. And I think that we're very pleased and confident about the recent decision of the United States Court of Appeals, and that our opportunity to pursue our claims at the trial court, we believe, are going to be in our favor, and that we're very confident about, you know, being able to restore at least some sense of dignity in this process, because that's exactly what we were not accorded in the beginning. And to have to take it to through a federal court, though, while, you know, it's been a difficult and long process, the result can be, and we believe will be, very positive, and has not been something I'm sure that the company anticipated they would have to contend with.
Great. Thanks for joining us today, Vera Francis.
Thank you, Meredith.
Again, that was Vera Francis, Passamaquoddy tribal member, giving us an update on the LNG lawsuit. Now let's turn to the proposed tribal racino that is set to go before Maine voters next month. We have by phone Donald Soctoma, the Passamaquoddy tribal representative to the state legislature.
Welcome to the program, Representative Soctoma.
Good morning.
Good morning. Can you first introduce yourself and talk a little bit about how you became involved in politics?
Okay. Well, my name is Donald Soctoma. I was elected in 1998 to represent the Passamaquoddy tribe in the Maine legislature, and I served until 2002, and last year ran again and was reelected for another term. So I represent both Passamaquoddy communities, and I've introduced several pieces of legislation over the years, and have a good relationship with the legislature and the people in the Augusta. So we're one of the big things that we're introducing, that we did introduce this session, was the Racino initiative. And it was passed by the legislature and the Senate, and the governor vetoed it. Then we had enough signatures to bring it before the state on November 6th. This issue will be brought up, and the state of Maine will decide whether to allow Washington County to have a racino.
Donald, why is the tribe pursuing this project?
Well, the main thing is the tribe has been pursuing this since 1992. This is a way to generate revenue and jobs and all the benefits that come along with it. We have to have this type of business in Washington County to sort of pull the tourists in our direction. We've tried quite a number of different business ventures, but because of the distance and the cost of transportation, that hasn't worked. And we're finding out across the nation that racinos are really changing for better the economic atmosphere. The latest thing was New Orleans. The report out of New Orleans was the only thing that's really rejuvenating New Orleans is the racinos in that part of the country.
Can you talk about the specifics of the project that that is being proposed right now, and then what language will be put on the referendum for voters to vote on next month? What are the specifics? The location is to be in the Calais area?
Yes. November 6th, we're going to be question number one on the ballot, and whether to allow a tribal racino in Washington County. And it's going to be located in the city of Calais. The tribe has options on 700 acres of land. And we've brought this issue before the Calais City Council, and they voted overwhelmingly to support the issue. So what we're planning on is working with the Maine horsemen to develop a racetrack and within that racetrack, we're going to have agricultural fairs and also slot machines, and we're planning on building a conference center to try to make this a destination resort.
Donald, what are some, you've told us some of the benefits, that there's jobs, a chance for economic development to prosper in Washington County. To this, are there anything that's controversial about this?
Well, it depends who you talk to.
I see.
For myself, I don't see no problems with this. If you look at the Racino in Bangor, the recent statements by the Bangor Police Department that they can't say, they can say that the crime in Bangor isn't related to the Racino. So that sort of cuts off everybody's statements about increased crime and gaming. So I really don't see problems with this.
Can you elaborate a little bit more on the definition of a racino? You're saying this is this will be a place for harness racing as well, the hopes to develop more around that particular aspect as well. Can you talk about that a little more?
Okay. A racino is a concept that incorporates the harness racing and agricultural fairs. And it also incorporates the use of slot machines, just as the one in Bangor does. The legislation that's going to be before the state for the November 6th ballot is the tribe is going to dedicate 41% of the revenue back to state and local government. And that's a major percentage right there of the revenue coming back, and it's broken up in the lines of majority of that 41% is going to go to the Fund for Healthy Maine, and that'll go into helping the needy. That 10% of that is 10% is going to go to supplement the racing purse, and then various other categories, but it comes back to the state and back to local government. One thing that the tribe did initiate was we've added percentages for the community colleges and also for the university system in Washington County. Anybody who wants to go to school in Washington County at the Calais Washington County Community College or the University of Machias will be eligible for scholarships.
What will the Passamaquoddy be using the benefit, the profits for? Do you have any specific programs in mind, or?
Well, the tribe's in need right now. We have over 50% unemployment rate. We have probably the highest percentage of usage of food stamps, and Washington County itself has the highest unemployment rate. What the tribe's going to do with their percentage is going to supplement health benefits for the elderly. It's going to fund a Boys and Girls Club that is in desperate need of funds. It's going to go towards remodeling our church in our community. There's so many needs. It's going to pay for our infrastructure, our public works.
So it's not going to go into individual pockets like some may perceive?
No. See, that's the difference between this proposal and the last proposal. The tribe is funding this campaign right now with its own funds. And so that means we're going to be owning this, and the money is going to stay right in the state. You know, you can't say that for other organizations that are being funded from outside sources. A lot of that revenue goes out. But for us, the revenue is going to stay in the area and be recirculated.
And what is your perception of support in Washington County and throughout the state, and how you think that might translate in the vote this November?
Well, I've been traveling around the state talking to different organizations, and I'm finding that there's a lot of support in the state for this. They know the need in Washington County for jobs and at least some hope. So there's a lot of support, and I'm hoping that people throughout the state, you know, they know of this need, and I'm hoping that they go out and vote on November 6th and vote to support number one.
Are there other issues that you want to bring up concerning this before we close?
Well, I think this is a good deal for Maine, for the whole state. It's going to provide quite a bit of number of construction jobs. We're looking at possibly a $30 million facility, so it's going to employ probably for a couple of years construction people. And then we're going to be hiring a staff to run this, and it's going to be taking a lot of people off of, I believe it's going to take a lot of people off of welfare, so that's sort of a double benefit that the state's going to have. Now, instead of paying welfare in that area, they're going to be people are going to be able to pay taxes and supplement the state budget.
Well, thank you for being on our show, Donald. We'd like to have you come back sometime. You've been listening to Indigenous Voices, a monthly talk show discussing topics affecting the Native people of Maine with Rhonda Fry and Meredith DeFrancesco. Indigenous Voices can be heard every third Tuesday of the month from 10 to 11 in the morning.
The theme song is Teresa's Spirit Song by Penobscot Tribal member Teresa Sapier on her I Am Thankful album. Amy Brown engineered today's show. You can listen to archived programs of Indigenous Voices on WERU.org.